I think my favorite thing that she threw on was literally towards the end of the episode, where she's like, if you're willing to spend like a lot of money on a bottle of wine that probably won't last more than 1 or 2 days, there really shouldn't be that much of a complaint to buy a bag of coffee that's going to go to a cause that you have a connection with now. Because usually, half the time, if you're buying from a smaller roastery or a smaller company like that, they'll give you more information on the coffee that makes you feel like you're actually contributing to something larger than yourself.
Yeah, I was trying to come up with a, because she mentioned luxury, but we don't consider coffee a luxury.
True.
I'm trying to think of the word. What do we consider coffee? It's part of our routine.
Yeah, I mean, like.
So therefore, it's not a luxury. It's an everyday $3, $5 cup of coffee. I mean, you just do it.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time it comes back towards like that older like wave of coffee from when she started. It was like coffee wasn't even really about the quality. It was more about the community and like going from just like having really crappy coffee that was like maybe a dollar or two a cup, or like things that were flavored that you could kind of combine to make your own concoctions, like she was saying. A lot of the time, this new world is more like the opposite now. Is like a lot of the community aspect of when she was talking about like laptop campers and like Wi-Fi, like that community aspect is almost completely replaced by the quality of coffee. And it lost the balance that it needs to kind of like merge those two like ecosystems to create like a whole different one, which is like a good combination of having that, what she was talking about from Australia, having like the coffee forward, food forward, and then the people. So it was just really interesting.
Yeah. And I think the laptop campers, I've never heard that term before, but I love it.
Yeah.
But it seemed to be that was part of our fabric because we didn't have that at home.
Like the Wi-Fi. Space.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So you use that coffee space as your office space per se. And I mean, I remember, where was it? It might have been Panera at the very beginning. I remember them talking about that they had a policy that you're not there more than an hour. You couldn't log on for more. And then they can't realize, why are we kicking people out? You know, because they may buy it. It just, they were using tape. But it came down to you didn't have Wi-Fi at home. Laptops were kind of new idea, and you just wanted to get out and use them. And maybe it was more be a part of the community. I've got a laptop, and I'm gonna work here for 8 hours a day. I never participated in it. I thought, I can't work with all the distraction anyway. But there was a thing to that. But no, to that point of it's evolved again.
Mm-hmm.
It's now that, okay, now the coffee has the grade that it has, and everybody kind of knows and has their favorite, and you know, they're doing whatever they are with their favorite. But she mentioned something about that. She said, I just feel so old. But it's like, but this industry needs that OG. To know where it came from.
Yeah, I also thought the connection to her kind of like being along the wave of that second to third wave of coffee, it brings like a whole new level of a lens that we kind of like are lacking in terms of at least the community aspect. Because now that she's like, she's done a lot of competitions, she's worked as a roaster, she's now working in QC, she's still competing. It's like, she's still like participating in a lot of this new wave stuff because competing was something that was really daunting for her, and still like finding fondness from like the ability to just kind of know the people more than the actual coffee. So I think her bringing up her point of diversity, I thought that story of her having like one friend and the other friend both being in the same, like only thinking they were the ones that existed, versus like now she's like, yeah, I see a lot of diversity, but it could still improve. Like that goes to show that like, yeah, there's a lot more that's growing now, but like we shouldn't just be complacent with where it is if like somebody who's OG says it still needs to grow. Like, and that says a lot.
You need those benchmarks
because
you can live in your own little world like you've been in it for the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. Someone, it could be in the five, and they think, wow, we've progressed, we're doing great. As you said, check the box, check the box, check the box. And you have these people that have been in it for now since 98 kind of going, yeah, but.
That's longer than I've been alive.
Yeah. Well, like, when she finally put a time marker on, I'm going, yeah, you have seen a lot with coffee. And even her mentioning, it'd be interesting to know that, you know, it was crap then.
Mm-hmm.
But was it, though? We just didn't know. You know what I
mean?
Well,
here's the thing. When
did it finally get better?
I was going to say crap is subjective.
It definitely is.
I think a lot of it was the influence of what a lot of people who still have that second wave mentality is. Okay. I could just add a shitload of like sugars and cream and coffee is just going to taste good because it's just sweet and it's flavored with something I enjoy. Like she was talking about chocolate coffee. I was like, yeah, if I could like make my own concoction of shitty coffee that just has a bunch of like preservatives and shit in it, doesn't matter what I'm drinking at that point.
Right.
And like, it's funny because she brought up like diner coffee. And like how that evolution of the food industry is starting to grow with having the matching food and matching good coffee. I have gone to so many places that have horrible coffee and great food. And I hate that. Like, I'm just like, I also wish we could just invest a lot more in our coffee programs for service industry and restaurant industry.
Right, because it's based on what they're what they're being delivered from their food service.
Yeah,
exactly. But it can be because who was it that you interviewed that serviced Disney?
Andrea.
Exactly. So you would think Disney, though Disney's pretty good at food and drink. They are. I mean, being there a few times that we did with the family, they got good food and good coffee. But it shouldn't have surprised me. But if Disney can do it.
Mm-hmm. Like lead by example.
Lead by example that, you know, just crank up the greatest a little bit. You'd be surprised. Yeah. And it's so funny. I don't know why this popped in my head, but I would be so intrigued by a coffee shop that did not, when you mentioned cream and sugar and such, that did not offer that.
See, here's
that,
the thing.
That
would
be
real
interesting if that starts to happen. Yes. Because they'd have so much confidence in their coffee.
It's a niche almost. It's like when people go to those restaurants that are like, we're going to berate you the whole time. Because they want to go for that experience.
Right, right. That you know, it's like, sir, you don't add anything to the meal because that's an insult to the chef.
Yeah.
Same thing. I would love to run into some place that has no cream, no sugar option. You drink as we give it to you.
Right.
Because you'll ruin it if you do.
Yeah. That's also complete confidence in the product.
Big time, isn't it? Wouldn't it be great? That it's that, nope, sorry, we don't offer that. Mm-hmm.
That has to be universal. Like, I would imagine that process, if somebody was to start a shop that way, they would have to bring in so many people to have just a unanimous agreeance that this is a good coffee without sugars or cream.
Right.
And I think that's going to be, that would be really hard, but that would be commendable at the end of the day.
Right. Because I know I have added a little bit of cream just to bring down the acidity. So you know what? Mm-hmm. That's an education on my part that there's a point where like, well, wait a minute. If it's too acidic, then you should be drinking something else. Maybe there's another option that's a little bit less acidic. That's the conversation then you have to learn about the different coffees.
Yeah. I think it's also like where you start in your coffee journey shouldn't be with like this is a little bit more specific. Like don't start on coffees that have extremely like – progressive processing. Like I'd start on probably like a washed processed coffee versus like something that's fermented in a like anaerobic process. You know what I mean? Like that's a little bit overwhelming for like people who like they associate coffee more for the body. I feel like that's a little bit of where the second wave started. It's like coffee shouldn't really have acidity. Why is it so like spicy almost versus like now coffee is like, what, where is the acidity? Like it needs a balance. So I think that if you can introduce coffee to people who aren't interested in learning, I would start with a coffee that's not extremely abrasive in acidity. And I would never introduce it with a dark roast. I think if I had the choice, I just would never do dark roasts. Because like you're getting immediate like carbon, kind of like that leather. It's almost like harder to withstand that. Because if you just drink a dark roast as itself, you're basically getting ash and almost like straight bitter acidity from the get-go. And it lingers and it like stays in your mouth for a really long time. So it's like there's a person who I read their book and they were talking about how when they got introduced to coffee, they also had this assumption that coffee needed to be added with all these things. And then somebody insisted that they drink it just black. So they drank it black, and they're like, I've never expected to taste blueberry when drinking coffee. And that changed the that was when the transition of coffee being an actual good flavor like having complexities versus just being one tone that needs to have flavors added to it. So it's just like, if you go into it with the mindset of coffee doesn't need additions, it just stands alone as a product itself, versus with this older mindset of coffee has only ever existed with flavors already added, like, go open-minded with a blank slate.
Right, right. And that's almost, again, it kind of goes back to that education of good coffee shops, and probably do exist, that it's that you have an education evening of understanding.
Yeah.
What you like, what you don't like, so you are a better customer and a better coffee lover too. They do that for wine. They have wine tastings all the time.
Yeah.
Again, we've equated coffee and wine before.
Yeah.
I remember this conversation food, but it is that
cupping and
it's that mouth sensation. Well, and the smell sensation. It's the same thing.
Yeah, cupping for coffee is essentially the same kind of profiles you'd be seeking out in wine. So I worked in a wine boutique as well. So I worked for Kraft Wines. And when I was able to apply that knowledge to coffee, the transition of understanding coffee was seamless. So yeah, you could kind of just marry the two ideas. You want to buy a bottle of wine that's like $40. Well, go ahead and try and like understand the wine by itself, and then see how much you're able to pick out through understanding your taste buds better with doing the same thing with a good cup of coffee.
And then buying the bag of beans that of $17 is nothing.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
And it's hard to go back from there, to be honest. Like, I know that, like, I have friends that are like, well, I can just drink diner coffee and be okay with it. And I'm like, well, sadly, I can't be on board with that. Like, as soon as you kind of, like, have the experience of sourcing and understanding like what goes into a cup of coffee and trying really good coffees that aren't even like cup of excellence coffees, like they're just like good, like generally lesser of defects, and you just drink it on a nice lighter to medium roast, like for the most part, like it's really hard to go back from something as simple as that to you're having Folgers in your cup.
But it's good to the last drop, you know. Yeah. And can you imagine the insult it is to Origin that they're drinking it with cream?
Yeah, I feel like also these waves of like cultural landmarks for coffee, I don't know if that actually exists in different parts of the world. Is this just an American concept? Because I think a lot of the time coffee drank in other cultures for the most part has stayed pretty consistent until a lot of this new age stuff. So part of me is like, okay, so like I know Arabs haven't changed the way they drank coffee from when it started. And it's an acquired taste, or you just kind of like jump feet first and then you either like it or you don't. But I think a lot of the time it's just like, so how did Australia get to that point? You know, did they already start off with that idea of good coffee and good food? Or was that something that also grew into their version of third wave versus us like having kind of like done what she was talking about, we need to spend more money on the coffee, like commercial coffee it's larger lots, more or less defects, and it's just on some generic ass roast pumped into Folgers or whatever, and then it's sold.
Right.
Or instant coffee that's really shitty in America.
Yeah. I would imagine the evolution of the coffees from different countries happened because somebody wanted to break into another market.
Yeah.
So they know that you can't jump feet first into Arabic coffee. As an example you just mentioned.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting.
There's got to be a middle ground to get them there. Mm-hmm. So what's that next wave to kind of pull them in to train their taste buds to come all the way, maybe potentially.
Mm.
But if nothing else, it's the marketing. I'm assuming it's the marketing piece. Okay, can we not dumb it down, but bring it to American taste, or, you know, the market they want to go into. Let's put it that way, and evolve it into that. So
which is mass production at a cheaper price.
It is, ultimately.
Yeah.
And you're, again, kind of disrespecting Origin.
Exactly.
You really are.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the big picture is to sell more green because of the evolution.
Yeah.
And again, same result, I guess it comes down to. But sometimes why you do things with that same result does matter.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah, that's but yeah, she was. I'd love that. I mean, I think that's probably the only guest that's been in that long. You could have that. I think
at least that's been like forward with that information. I don't think I've spoken to anyone else who. I mean, maybe Ruth. But like for the most part, like that's a lot of, just a lot of years working in an industry where it seemed like things wouldn't change, and then it just automatically started changing overnight. It seems like the third wave kind of like hit the ground running. But yeah, I think like for the most part, like even our older guests that have been on the show too, who have experienced the second wave, kind of had the same sentiments.
Yeah. Anything you want to wrap it up with or just leave it at that?
No, I think that, like, she really kind of, like, touched on some really good focal points. It's on a more broad scale that can just kind of, like, umbrella or spiderweb, as she said, down into, like, different categories. And I think this has been a reoccurring, like, issue that needs to be constantly brought to awareness of some change to happen is to diversify. Like, we need more diversity in not just the quota aspect, but on a genuine level. And I liked that she brought up, like, the best way to go about it is to really look inwards on what you're creating as a company, what you're creating as a work culture and environment, what you're able to provide in terms of opportunity. Like, I think overall, that's a really good way to end the episode.
Cool. Yeah, that's good. I just,